Looks like I'm already in the red zone. Somebody doesn't want me to speak. Thank you, Christopher. Although I see a few faces that are probably giving me the red zone, too. Let me first just situate what I'm going to say in terms of this panel that got made up at the last minute and try to tell you where I fit in. I'm assuming we've done what Hank suggested, which is we've gone to industry and talked to them in their terms and told them, you know, you got to do something here. So I'm taking something that shouldn't be taken for granted for the moment. I'm also assuming that the social processes and the social innovation that Robert was talking about is underway. But in parallel to that, and this is where I come in, I want to talk about the scientific innovation. So I'm connecting back to earlier panels talking about whether genomics, epigenetics, the brain, and everything else, and what we can learn from science as a way to answer some of these questions. So I'm moving us back to, I'm assuming we've got industry on side, we've got academic researchers interested in the topic, we've got governments interested. How do we actually then solve the scientific problems? Now, I'm not a scientist, I'm a lawyer. And so I'm not going to tell you how to solve the science, I'm going to tell you how to think about solving the science. And really, there are two types of scientific question we can talk about. One is fairly early stage science, like what's going on here, creating the large data sets, data mining, moving knowledge from one place to another. And then there's the later stage, the development of the actual product. I'm going to be concentrating for now on that first problem, because unless we address the first problem, we don't get to the second problem. And I'm going to look at how do we create collaborations to create the scientific knowledge that we need in order to answer this, these type of questions, whether we're talking about, you know, sequestration of salt or technologies that grow different types of plants in different climates or whatever you want. So I'm not going to spend lots of time on this. I mostly do my research on the health field, dealing with pharmaceuticals, but I also do some in agriculture, dealing primarily with how to create new food crops and so on. But in all of these areas, a similar problem comes about, which is there are a lot of different actors with different pieces of the answer to the problem that are working through different modes, through different networks that don't often connect around a single project. The traditional model of innovation has been, especially in industry, is that that a company will take an idea all the way through from early stage until it has a product. So 30 years ago, most research was done in-house by a single entity, whether in health or agriculture. Today, if you look at how innovation's done, it's the exact opposite. It's the minority that does everything in-house. The majority of players have to work together, often between public and private sector actors, that is, academic research and industry. And so collaborations have just taken on a more significant role with time. And there are several reasons why that is and that we can build upon. The first is risk sharing. The easy stuff was done, right? The first, you know, once we started genomics and we started everything else, all the easy stuff we've done and was done relatively inexpensively. We're no longer at the easy stuff. We've got complex problems where the solutions are far from obvious, and the types of solutions, the type of technologies we're trying to develop, are risky, not just from a marketing point of view, but just technologically. We don't actually know if they're going to work, and so no one company, no one entity wants to put all of its resources into answering the question, will this type of technology work or not? Because if they find out the answer is yes, then all their competitors get access to that knowledge for free. They just see that it worked and don't face the cost and don't face the risk. Whereas if they found out the answer is no, they saved their competitors a whole bunch of money. So one reason to do collaborations is if you get the major players involved, especially the people who see themselves as the leaders and sell themselves as the leaders involved with it, then they can share the risk across competitors. Also involving academic researchers lowers the risk because you're essentially building on public funding of research through collaboration. So it's there's financial risk sharing and also technological risk, and that gets to my second point as well. And then third, there's cost reduction. So not only do we diminish technological risk, that we share costs across actors, but we don't do duplicative research. And so overall, this, we're paying less money to do the research. We can find out once and for all by sharing data, by allowing other people to see what didn't work. I'm saving them money at the same time by having access to their negative approaches. We save money. The last point is that we also know that different groups have different skill sets. And trying to build that skill set within your own organization is incredibly expensive and may not work. If we work together, we can actually accelerate research because we have access to that built-in, that existing capacity. So collaborations reduce costs, reduce risk, and accelerate the pace of research. At least that's the evidence we have today, mostly anecdotal. It's hard to do systemic hard evidence in this, but we're trying to do that. So, okay, collaborations are great. How do you structure it? There are different ways one can structure collaborations. One is through a proprietary model. A proprietary model would mean a fairly limited group of actors get together and try to solve a problem, and then they come up with a proprietary solution that is shared either within that narrow group or one of the partners takes it out and pays some type of royalty to the others. That's fine when you're getting into more downstream work. I don't think it really works when you're talking about trying to show advanced basic science and the basic types of solutions that you're trying to get, as opposed to coming up with a particular product. So everything that is up to product development, taking a technology and sticking in a particular setting, a proprietary solution is limited because, first of all, you have a very small group of actors. Once you get to a large group of actors, it's hard to manage keeping the knowledge proprietary because it will leak out. The second is that if it's a basic technology, no one user is going to be able to use it all by themselves or all the applications, so they're either going to have to spend a lot of time licensing it and so on, which does get expensive. So I'm going to put that aside for now and look at two other types of collaboration, especially for the earlier pre-competitive stages. One is the open source solution, which is at least in biotechnology has been advocated both on the health and the agricultural side. And the open source solution basically follows on the logic of the open source software, which is everybody collaborates, nobody takes any intellectual, well, sorry, they basically license out their intellectual property to anybody who wants. And the idea is if you've got 1,000 eyes looking at the project, at the same problem, you'll come to a solution. So everybody adds their little piece, building on everybody else's, and anybody who wants to use the solution can go ahead and do it. It's based, in the software, it's based on obtaining a copyright and licensing it out on standardized terms. And it works fairly well for software where the costs of development are low, where the lifespan of the technology is relatively low. It doesn't work so well in biomedicine or bioagriculture, because your timelines are much longer, your investment costs are much higher, and your regulatory costs are higher. So because your innovation costs are higher, you're not necessarily ready just to throw your little idea out there and not have any control over it once it's out into the larger environment. Nobody is going to do the work necessary to get regulatory compliance, because if you do it, everybody else benefits. There's just a lack of incentives. Much of this is protected not through copyrights, which are free, but through patents, which are very expensive and difficult to maintain. In the software movement, you've got a fairly homogeneous set of actors, people with the same attitudes towards software development, In this sector, you're talking about people, you know, you're talking about large industry, small industry, academic researchers, public organizations, and so on, with very different interests, and it's hard to come together necessarily through, you know, just throwing it out there. The other problem is that open source still uses a license, so terms of use, and different, what you're likely to get is a whole bunch of different groups developing different technologies using slightly different sets of rules for their licenses. And this becomes a problem when you want to put everything together, because a single product that is composed of several different things, each one with its own set of rules about who can use it and how and what kind of attribution you have to give, becomes impossible to manage. So open source is good when you're dealing with informatics, to the extent that we were talking about the computer models and doing the mashup, that's great. Open source is a great way to think about it because you're dealing, again, with a fairly homogeneous set of actors with similar type of interests. The cost of getting intellectual property and licensing is low, and the timelines are fairly short, and the costs are less. However, there are some challenges to that. Some companies can come along and patent certain key parts of the technology. And then you have to start getting into a defensive position of either coming up with funds to defend people who are creating the open source knowledge if they're sued, or you have to basically innovate in order to get patents that you never are going to assert, but simply to use against people who may sue you. So open source works in when you're talking about just IT-related innovations, but once you're moving into the wet stuff, then it becomes more difficult. An alternative approach is the open access solution, originally put forward as open innovation. I won't go through the history of it. But instead of using intellectual property rights, the open access brings together a set of actors who agree upon certain principles. So we don't agree upon particular rules of licensing and so on, but particular principles where they agree basically to share the knowledge. So very concrete goals, unlike open source, which tends to be diffuse and goes off in different directions. You bring together actors for a very specific project, and you agree beforehand that whatever we produce, we are not going to claim intellectual property rights, and the knowledge will be disseminated to everyone at exactly the same time. And this avoids a lot of the legal costs, both up front and later on. I'll give you one example. This is unfortunately not in agriculture, but there are very few examples around. The Structural Genomics Consortium, which is on the health side, is trying to develop three-dimensional structures of proteins. And they have about a quarter of their money from industry, so the large pharma, and the rest come from either foundations or government. The reason you want to know the 3D structure of these molecules, if you're going to try and develop a drug against it, you want to know what the shape is, because molecules fit together. And so everybody has an interest in finding out the structure. The way it works is each contributor of money is able to nominate the things that the proteins they want have a structure of. And it goes into a big pile, and a scientific committee chooses the ones to structure, and they do the work. The people who put in the money don't know which ones are being done until the moment that the structure is complete and it's released to everyone. So this does a few things. First, if you contribute, you get an advantage. Why? You get to help nominate the 3D structures, but in a way that nobody else knows that you nominated it, because it goes into a common pile. So that's an advantage to joining. But at the same time, all the knowledge gets released at the same time, so we don't have to worry about rules of access at different times and so on. It's been a highly productive collaboration with articles in top peer-reviewed journals. They're well ahead of schedule. They're now moving into epigenetics, and that was mentioned before, where they want to actually devise molecules that act as probes for epigenetics research. And again, they want to do this on an open access model. But one could bring this easily into agriculture in terms of the same types of development, where you have a very clear idea of what your ambitions are, you get all the players to put in money, they all help contribute to deciding the priorities, but then the knowledge is given out. The key feature to all this is that they just eliminate all legal rights that anybody has, and the goal of that is to really take away either strategic behavior after or negotiation costs. I have 1 second left, so let me just summarize it. So there are different models of how to put together these collaborations. As I said, I haven't talked so much about the more downstream. Open access seems to be a model underexplored in agriculture. I'm not aware of any consortium that uses this model in agriculture, but if we can convince the industry to participate, this would at least be one of the models I suggest.